Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable on Monday evening, August 5th. Maureen O'Flynn and John Cheek, leading singers from the Metropolitan Opera, will be among the performers in the return performance of the new opera Pearl, which is a modern retelling of The Scarlet Letter, now with new music and a new ending. So if you saw it before, you can see it again, and it'll be different, and we'll talk about that. The project was initiated by the conductor Sarah Jobin, a Berkshire resident and the first woman to conduct the San Francisco Opera. The composer is Amy Scarria. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. It is.
And the libretto written by Carol Gilligan and her son Jonathan, based on her play, The Scarlet Letter, which was commissioned and produced by Shakespeare & Company in 2002. Joining us this morning, we welcome Carol Gilligan, Sarah Jobin, and Maureen Flynn to the Roundtable. What a delight to have you back. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So when we all last met together as a group, Carol has been here since then, but when we last all met together as a group, this was a workshop production, and you were giving it a tryout and seeing what happened. So what happened?
Well, we're here.
How did it go?
People liked it.
That's good.
Yeah, we had a sold-out crowd, and we was described as a bold opera project by Boston Musical Intelligencers. So we were tremendously encouraged to take this project further and to go deeper. And I mean, I, as the librettist, I learned so much from the performance last year, including that I felt that the women characters, Hester Prynne, adult Pearl, that's the child grown up. I mean, now she's the age her mother was when all of those events of Scarlet Letter took place.
Right.
And so now this is the daughter. And I'm fascinated by what do we tell our daughters about, I mean, the themes of this play about love, about religion, about what it means to be a good mother. And what does a daughter make of this? Now she herself is a mother and a writer. And how does she look back on who was her mother and who was her father?
And also what she knows of that relationship versus what is thought of within the culture and the community.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's an amazing point in the opera where Hester sings, there's the A that branded me set me free. Now, that's an extraordinary statement.
Mm.
And that's the amazing thing about working as a writer with the character of Hester, is here is a woman who never backs away from her passion. I mean, she's shamed. She's scorned. She's set outside. And in fact, it sets her free. She's the only woman in the novel with the name. All the other women are called good wives.
Mm.
And so this is the woman who's going to sing about love, who's going to talk about, and in the end, I mean, the ending is so amazing. We don't remember that from reading the novel in high school where it seemed like a tragic love story. Hester can't release Dimmesdale, but she frees her daughter.
As you said a moment ago, that it gave you an opportunity to bring this further. So how did you know right away that that's where you wanted to go?
Yes.
That you,
I mean, it was just amazing. I mean, it was Sarah who came into my life 5 years ago and said, I want to take you out of your comfort zone.
Good job.
Yeah, good job. For you. Nice. Very nice. So what is it like taking people out of their comfort zone? Because
just,
I mean,
wait a second, Joe.
Yeah.
It's going to happen right here, now.
Oh, good. I don't know that I've ever been in a comfort zone, quite frankly. What is interesting to me is that, because even as Carol talks, you still hear the beautiful language that she is so associated with. You know, that the fact that the words are coming out that are so gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you then take that and make that, yes, out of her comfort zone, but still very much reflective of her work?
Well, I think for me, the amazing part of this is just putting great people together and then seeing what they do.
Mix, like, stir, and enjoy.
Yeah. And I have to say, part of the amazing thing for me about working with this project is, you know, getting to work with people like Carol Gilligan and Maureen O'Flynn and seeing where Carol's thinking is going with this whole project. And I don't know. just being
I think the comfort zone involved with for taking Carol, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, is that she's a literary person. She's right. in the mm-hmm. realm of writers. And to suddenly take that person and throw them into a much bigger realm, which is an operatic realm, which basically takes all of your emotions and gives you a bigger palette on which to express them. That's, I think it's one of the reasons I went into opera, because I'm full of emotions, and in opera you can express huge emotion.
Now, well, I think, and this is a story that is about huge emotions.
Exactly, exactly.
Huge emotions.
Sometimes words aren't enough. Sometimes you need music to accompany them.
Now, the wrap off on opera is that it is that there is a soap opera quality to it, in that these are very simple stories that are protracted into a beautiful art form. Mm-hmm. This story is more complex. Does that play well? Does that work?
Well, I think it does, and I think to answer your initial statement about taking ordinary situations, and they're extraordinary to the persons that are going through them, whether they're insignificant or smaller versions to the greater world at large. So those people going through those scenarios, through those traumas, through their own personal journey, it is operatic. And it's certainly this play and this book that Carol and Jonathan have written is definitely operatic. I think Hawthorne's book originally was operatic. It's a small, central world that's happening in this community, but it answers to a much larger question about humanity. So I think it definitely plays to the operatic.
I mean, you think about when I heard the names of the male characters in the novel, Dimmesdale and Chillingworth. And I thought, Hawthorne is asking, how does a man of worth become chilling? How does a man of nature, of Dale, become dim? Mm. These are huge. I mean, what Maureen said is you need huge resources mm-hmm. to answer that question in a way that's not banal.
What do you think were the feminist qualities of that book, of Hawthorne, in digesting it and looking at it?
There are two lines that that Hester has. I think it's an incredibly feminist novel. And I think, I mean, Hawthorne wrote this in the 6 months, the novel, after his mother died. And as a child, he had seen his mother scorned by the more aristocratic, witch-burning Hawthorne family. You know, he added the W to that. Mm. Hester Prynne is an amazing character that he writes. She has two lines in the novel, and one is, at the ending, where she says she tells people who come to her for counsel and comfort of her firm belief that at some future time when the world has grown ripe for it, a new truth will be revealed in order to establish the whole relation between man and woman on a surer ground of mutual happiness. Mm. And the idea that you can't envision the political transformation that was the American vision, the city on the hill, without transforming the relationship between woman and man. And midway through the novels, which is set in 1649, the year that the English king is beheaded, Hester says, men of the sword have overthrown nobles and kings. Men, philosophers have, you know, in words, attacked ancient prejudices and so forth. But she says, for women to have, and this is in Hawthorne, a just and suitable position in the new society, the essential nature of the opposite sex, or what through long hereditary habit has become like nature, would have to be changed and modified, and so would that of women too. And that's a more challenging, a daunting task, she says, than overthrowing nobles and kings. So she's saying for this dream of an American democratic society to be realized, you need a psychological transformation. And I think everything Maureen said about opera and Sarah's impulse, which is that this has to go into opera. How could you do something this huge, emotionally huge, and also, I mean, politically huge, without that range of resources of music and words?
I think Hester, too, is a timeless woman, because certainly in the time that it was written, it was more apt for a woman of her stature to become completely cowed and scorned and self-ashamed, and she does not. The scorn and shame is other people's perception. I don't believe Hester ever really feels
Never.
It.
Never. She embroiders the A with gold
right.
thread.
And even today, I'm sad to say, that's not necessarily how women react
right.
to unfair, what's the words?
Judgments
and perceptions. So I think that she's timeless and she's still important because we mustn't take that. We mustn't be run by organizations. We must be run by our own morals, our own right and wrong. And whether we're male or female, we are all worthy.
I think you see, and I think Hawthorne's saying it's not just the women. I mean, you have to look at
right.
what did happen to these two. And he goes to great lengths to tell you that Dimmesdale and Chillingworth are these incredibly intelligent mm-hmm. and sensitive men. Mm-hmm. And what happens to these men? And I think in that sense, it's a really deeply feminist novel, because it's really about a whole transformation that involves both women and men. And one of the places we've gone this year is really to deepen our male characters in the opera and make sure they're not two dimensional.
When you think about this, in your performance, I guess I'm interested in, Maureen, you've done a lot of classic repertoire. It's varied, obviously, but to be in a production from the ground up and to be in the whole process, that has to be incredibly rewarding, and I would think would inform a performance more than anything I can imagine.
Absolutely. First of all, it's a kick to be in on the ground floor, but yeah. also to be able to have a chance to voice problems if there are problems. If I feel that what's needing to be said isn't in the music as well as it could be, or if, for instance, we had a fabulous workshop in December where we all got together and we all decided it was the best damn book club we'd all ever been a part of.
That's a quote from John Bellamer,
yeah,
the tenor.
It was just great because there was a like-mindedness to converse and dialogue and discuss with great openness what these characters were, what the composer and what the librettist wanted from this, what we as singers wanted from that. So it's exciting. It's really, really interesting.
And actually,
really interesting.
When we all thought about it, none of us could think of any other operas that have been created this way.
No, in fact.
With that degree yeah. of collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in one or two other new operas, but never this close with the librettist or the composer.
So do you have an idea of where from here, or just get through Monday night? And
we are in discussions.
It's still okay. a work
for the
in
future,
progress,
but yeah, it's a work in progress.
We're still, yeah. you know, it still has wings.
There are possibilities for the future.
We don't know where it's going to fly yet, but we're seeing what this new reincarnation looks like and where we go from here.
And I have to say, the whole project has already exceeded my wildest expectations. I mean,
that's true
yes,
for all
I
of
had
us.
The impulse to start this, but it's amazing where it goes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we went to Shanghai this year. We were invited to Shanghai.
And is it universal?
What we discovered in Shanghai is, I mean, even though, you know, you were going from an American culture where the whole religious theme has a lot of resonance in
sure.
America. In Shanghai, it has none. But the human story, I mean, in Shanghai, the story about what happens when a woman who is married to a man who she respects but is not in love with falls in love with somebody, they understood that story. And they understood the mother-daughter story. And when the little girl, the child Pearl in the opera, sings, "Mother, mother, tell me the truth." Now, can you imagine that in China? And that was huge. I mean, we had a standing room audience. We had 50, 60 Chinese students standing through this whole performance in English. And then just wanting to come back afterward and talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. They loved the opera. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing about opera, too, is that even those who didn't, I mean, the Chinese students translated the libretto into Chinese so that they could follow along with it. But the music spoke to them too, even and the Western music spoke to them. It was really an amazing coming together. And why we were invited to go to the University of Shanghai is they liked the combination of Hawthorne. I mean, this Americana. This was part of a Chinese American cultural exchange, and they liked the 21st century feminist standpoint. So it was great, and they we had wonderful conversations.
Well, that's terrific.
Yeah,
I mean, to be able to take that art and then discuss it and move it forward.
You know, and I felt you could only do this with art. I mean, you know, it wasn't kind of, it didn't get caught into the familiar kind of ruts of conversation and political.
It transcends all of that.
It's a human story.
Transcends.
You can understand this story.
Right.
In your career, Maureen, you're great.
She is. We agree.
Man. So what is next for you then?
Well, I'm kind of in between. I'm still doing some opera here and there. I'm doing some orchestra gigs. I've got some holiday gigs. I'm doing some cabaret, but I'm also about to venture into some film and TV audition and see what happens there. So I'm teaching and I'm doing projects like this, and every once in a while an orchestra gig, every once in a while some musical theater. So the answer to that is it's up and coming, and I'm not sure where it's going. But I'm still performing.
We're lucky
to have her. Still performing. I'm a performance creature.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, wonderful. This performance is Monday, August 5th. It is Pearl, and it's on the Tina Packer stage at Shakespeare and Company, and you can find out more by going to shakespeare.org, shakespeare.org for more information. Carol Gilligan, Sarah Jobin, and Maureen O'Flynn, I thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have
Thanks.
Pearl back.
Oh, thank you so much. We love coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.